Hello and welcome to the Payments Journal podcast. Today we're joined by Jens Oudenaart, Global Head of Payment Software at Diebold Nixdorf, as well as Mercator Advisory Group's own VP of Payments Innovation, Tim Sloan. They're going to discuss legacy versus cloud banking infrastructure for retail banks. So bankers in the audience, this one's definitely for you. Jens opens up the discussion with an overview detailing the recent evolutions within retail banking, and Tim joins to share his perspective of digital transformation within the same space, retail banking. From there, the discussion touches on the complexities and risks within legacy banking infrastructure, advice for bankers on how to approach transitioning from legacy to a cloud system, and finally, the key features of cloud-native payments platform. Without further ado, let's go to the show. So Jens, how about you kick us off with sort of an overview from your perspective of the topography of the landscape, where we stand?
Sure thing, Ryan. I think what we're seeing in the payments landscape is that over the last few years, it's really evolved considerably, and I would say at an increasing pace since the pandemic. And consumers are increasingly demanding the latest and the newest innovations from their financial institutions. And this rapidly shifting environment presents a material change for traditional banks. Many of them are still relying on payment systems that were really built over 50 years ago, emanating from when the original payment pioneers built electronic fund transfer platforms that were really meant to enable card services, right? So really just reliable and secured card payments. And many banks today are still relying on systems that come from that. And so if you think about the raft of new and emerging payment schemes built around digital ecosystems with a variety of tokens and security schemes and different payment networks to integrate with, you know, the legacy payment infrastructures are really struggling to cope with that. And that's a challenge for many institutions because they have either over time heavily customized those old, I will say, platforms, and that's not really the right architecture for the current payment space, or they're building in-house what I would call payment silos or digital payment islands that really aren't tightly integrated to process these new payment schemes. And so that's just increasingly a challenge for especially traditional financial institutions. But as always, we got Tim here, and I'm always keen to hear your perspective as well and see if you agree with that.
I'm totally on board with that. So when you take a look at the pace of change in payments, it's been unbelievable over the last 7 to 10 years. You have fintechs who are coming in and introducing entirely new types of use cases associated with payments. You have MasterCard and Visa introducing account-to-account functions within those card networks, and the fintechs are taking advantage of that. The traditional model, as you described it, is accurate. They have poured concrete around their payments infrastructure, where the fintechs, Visa, MasterCard, have all moved to the cloud. They're moving to an API-driven infrastructure. They're moving towards iterative processes in order to enhance and create new services on probably a monthly basis. So things have changed a lot, and it's time for everyone to start to recognize that and think, how are we going to be competitive?
Very interesting. So Jens, from your perspective, what are the unintended consequences or inherent risks of maintaining these existing legacy platforms for card services in a world, as you mentioned, where there's changing consumer expectations? And as Tim mentioned, fintechs and card networks moving to more iterative processes. Curious about unintended consequences.
Yeah, I would focus on the risks because I think the consequences are somewhat intended. But there's probably four large buckets that I would think of. The one that I hear many banks and heads of operations go to first is really costs, right? The old systems have a lot of technical debt, and so they're very expensive to adapt. We talked about these payments islands. That's a lot of duplication of efforts because you have to change code in multiple areas. And these are all on-prem systems, so you're not taking advantage of some of the cost savings that a cloud-native platform could allow you to have. So that's something that, you know, comes to mind first for many banks. But I would say the other three are equally important, if not more important. I think there are true risks of continuing on old legacy products around resilience and outages. And, you know, there's a couple of banks and just the last 6 months that have had more than 24-hour outages of their payments platform, which is a huge issue, obviously, as you can imagine. The number one thing, it's kind of the whole, you know, you have one job concept. You got to make sure that payments go through, right? So outages are important. Talent is important as well. These legacy systems, they're coded in COBOL. Almost half of the traditional banks out there still have payment systems coded in COBOL. And so when we talk to our customers that are moving over to modern payments platforms, that is a big driver, because even if they can find the talent, most of the talent doesn't want to touch those systems anymore. And then obviously compliance is a concern as well, because regulatory requirements are also changing at an increasingly rapid pace, and it's really hard to keep up with legacy systems. So I would say systemic risks would be the second one. I think leveraging data is really hard when you have siloed payment systems and old school payment systems. And that's important from a risk perspective. If you think about things like fraud scoring or credit risk underwriting, but it's also important from an innovation perspective, right? Because the more that you mine your data, the better that you understand and can anticipate shifting consumer demands. And so I'll close out with innovation and time to market. And I actually think that's the most important one, is really making sure that you can deploy new services in time so you can actually compete with fintechs, right? Which is what Tim mentioned earlier. There are so many fintechs out there innovating so fast, some of them really pursuing full bank licenses. Most banks derive about 30 to 40% of their revenues from payments. That is a big part of their revenues. And unless they can innovate at the pace of fintechs, they will actually lose out. And so I think that time to market, I would probably say, is the most important one.
I'm right there with you. I think time to market is what it's all about. Things are changing very fast. One simple example are the new authentication methods that have to be adopted. The networks are going to 3D secure and trying to get there as hard as they can. You have Microsoft, Google, and Apple all agreeing on using the new FIDO standard for biometrics as the new authentication method. In those siloed legacy systems, introducing new technology is extremely difficult. And if you can't do it, then you're going to be challenged by your competitors who have been able to standardize all of their channels on a single authentication model, including payments. And instead, you're going to have one authentication model for online, one authentication model for the branch, another one for card usage, another one for the call center. And the consumer will walk away. They'll just get so frustrated, they'll leave. And that's just one example of many that suggest the financial institutions really have to start taking this challenge of moving to the cloud in a serious way.
On the theme of financial institutions taking migration seriously, Jens, what are the primary drivers for a financial institution to modernize their payments infrastructure? And how do you get an organization to think that now's the time to act and instigate that migration?
Yeah, I think it's really the flip side of what we discussed, right? It's avoiding all of those risks and downfalls of sticking with your old system. But what's been happening is really that, you know, no one is blind to the reasons why you would shift to a modern payments platform. But changing a payments platform for a bank is like open heart surgery. It's something that's extremely risky. And so people have been pushing it off. They've seen all the reasons why they should do it, but they've avoided that risk. And so I think there's a couple of things that are changing now. It is that speed of innovation that has significantly increased over the last few years. If you just think about, you know, how quickly real-time payments, buy now, pay later are becoming a thing. I was just in India. And, you know, everywhere you go, you see Paytm, which leverages their UPI real-time payments, and you can pretty much do any kind of payment with that. I think Asia is a great example where you see how quickly that the payments world really can be disrupted. And so that change of pace and innovation, that's something eye-opening. And I think the other thing is that some banks successfully really have migrated to modern cloud-based payment systems. And so that also de-risks it for banks. I think one thing that's important is, as we talk about innovation, sometimes it's really hard to figure out which innovation will actually stick right. And so when we talk to banks, you know, I was recently talking to a bank in Europe, and they had spent a lot of time and effort and money preparing for EPI, the European Payments Initiative, which was really something that European countries and banks were going to put in place to compete with the international schemes. And that initiative is close to dead. if not dead already. And so it's really hard for banks to understand what's actually going to stick. So if you have an old system and you put all these resources and all this time and investments and you pick the wrong horse, that's just a waste. So that's also really important to be able to very quickly adapt and not waste time, not waste effort, not waste resources on the wrong horse, right? Other banks in Europe are really starting to talk about, you know, central bank digital currencies, and the ECB is thinking of that. And so there's all these things happening. You got to be able to be very nimble and efficient in adapting these new trends.
You know, Jens, a lot of what I see is different, I think, than what you're observing. I think it's kind of selection bias. The members of Mercator Advisory Group aren't so much facing the questions you asked. The question they're asking is, I need to get to the cloud, but which applications do I move? How quickly can I move? How do I manage security as I make that transition? You know, they have a range of implementation questions, but from a mindset perspective, they already, I think, have learned that the cloud microservices, containerized solutions will significantly reduce their cost, greatly improve their ability to adapt to change, be able to meet regulatory requirements faster. I think they're on board with that. The challenge for them is, out of all of the IT infrastructure I have, how do I start to make that transition with the limited cloud native knowledge that I have inside my institution?
Right on, Tim. That was my next question. We covered why, which is like avoiding the risks of costs and outages and talents and compliance. We discussed like when and avoiding the, I like the open heart surgery element of a migration. So Jens, like, talk to me about, you know, how should they do it? How should banks perform a migration?
Yeah, I think, Tim, you were spot on in what you said, right? It's, we understand it, but it just feels very daunting to migrate to those new systems, and we don't even know where to start. And it really shouldn't be that daunting. I think the beauty of these modern payment platforms and solutions is that they are very agile, and they are, you know, as Tim alluded to, they're containerized. They leverage microservices. And so what we do with all of our customers that we move on to our modern payments platform is really we workshop what the optimal migration path is for them. But we can have both their legacy system and their new system coexist alongside. And so you can really pick, you know, transaction types or certain systems that you're connecting and integrating with, and piecemeal move over payments transactions from the old system to the new system. You know, should you ever, you know, encounter a problem with just the press of a button, you move those transactions back to your old system as you fix what needs to be fixed on the new system. So it's a very de-risked approach for banks to figure out for themselves, what's the timeline I'm comfortable with to have two systems, and how do I really prioritize what moves first from a risk perspective, from a cost perspective. That's really how banks should think about it. And I think that's in line, Tim, with what you were just saying as well.
It absolutely is, Jim. I have worked with some of our members that are making that transition, and they decided they were going to go on-prem initially with the new architectures. As they were making the transition, they found that that transition was happening in a way that really made them comfortable that this was going to work. And then they're looking at, why are we running this on-prem with all of our own hardware and management and the rest of it? Let's start to move that up. And then they have options about a hybrid cloud, a public cloud, whatever. But getting it off their hardware was the next major step for this particular financial institution. And I think every institution that starts the journey will find that it's not as daunting as perhaps they think.
So Jens, presuming we've got there, you know, migrated, we've got the benefits of a cutting edge, reusable microservice technology, we've got a modern payments platform. What are the key features that financial institutions see? What are the first things that they're trying to get a hold of?
Yeah, there's a couple of them. Kind of ties back to the first question, but the one is just time to market, right? Our customers, what would take them months or even a year in terms of services to design, test, and deploy is now being done in a matter of weeks. And so if you think about the pace of innovation and the time to market, that is critical. Integrations with other systems, you know, through an API strategy, again, very solid, very easy to do. That is, from an innovation perspective, is really important. Also, there's a cost equation, right? We talked about that as well. Tim alluded to it as well. Tim, what you just said about on-prem versus going to the cloud, that's exactly what we see. A lot of customers at first ask us, okay, so you have a cloud native platform, but can I install it on-prem? And the answer is yes. And you have a lot of the benefits of the architecture, but you don't have the benefits of the elasticity of the cloud, and you don't have the benefit of cutting out your hardware cost. And soon people get comfortable with that. And we see our customers that move to the cloud, they're cutting their costs by about 50%. Some well over that per transaction. And again, as we think about payments being 30 to 40% of a bank's revenue, those operational gains really add up. So I think that's an important one as well. And then I think, you know, you just have all of the resiliency of the cloud as well. You have active deployments, you know, you don't have those outages that we talked about earlier that can be very embarrassing for a bank. So I think there's a lot of benefits on the innovation side, on the risk mitigation and resiliency side, and on the cost side to move.
I agree. Some of the financial institutions are looking back 5 years to some of the outages that occurred in the cloud, and the cloud service providers, AWS and Microsoft and IBM, have certainly learned how to fix those problems and how to manage the environment more effectively to de-risk that particular problem. There's still challenges associated with the transition as there is in any transition. My own financial institution, however, this is hilarious, decided to go with a core processor's transition strategy and fell flat on their face. They came up with a whole new system. The interface was not done effectively. They lost all the bill pay data in the process of transitioning. They couldn't do transfers anymore to pay my mortgage. It was just unbelievable. It took 3 months to get this thing fixed. So there's risk every place. And I think you really need to, institutions need to sit back and consider where the real risks are.
Yeah, and I would just add, I should have said this earlier, but as banks look to make that migration, I think it's clear from what both Tim and I have been covering, but you know, don't look for what a new payment platform can accommodate for. Can it do real-time payments or not? You know, that may be important to you, but really look at what's the architecture, what's the technology so that it's future-proof. You know, any modern cloud-based microservices-enabled platform can accommodate for real-time payments. You really want to have a payment system that can do any payment, any authentication. You know, Tim, you alluded to authentication, any integration, so that it can adapt quickly to what we don't know yet is going to come 5-10 years from now. So a lot of it is really about how the system adapts and how it's built versus the what it can accommodate today.
Totally agree. And sometimes you have to really drill down into the weeds to understand that architecture properly, because it's relatively easy to take an old architecture and call it a microservices architecture running in Kubernetes, when in reality, they did minimal refactoring of the solution just to be able to make that statement and get the check mark on the marketing papers.
Mm-hmm. So right.